Welcome to our first segment of this afternoon's program. It's Sunday, the 24th of October, 2021. It is now 1:02 in the studio. I'm your host, Kieran Murdoch. This afternoon's first discussion, is about taxation. We are primarily talking about how avoiding and evading taxes affects our societies. The impact of this activity has been greatly debated in the wake of the Pandora Papers. Now, the Pandora Papers are, of course, a massive leak of financial and corporate information, unprecedented in its scale, that has revealed details about the laws, the jurisdictions, and the firms and middlemen that allow elites around the world to conceal wealth, legally and illegally, and to avoid tax, sometimes to launder money, and in some cases to engage in corrupt acts. Amidst all the illegality revealed by the leak, it was also revealed the extent to which many people lawfully use tax havens and alternate jurisdictions to shift their wealth to a place where they pay less tax. The net effect is that trillions of dollars in taxable revenue escapes into minimal or no tax zones. That means there is less available to improve the lot of the rest of society. But of course, we can't talk about tax without speaking about general equity and fairness in taxation schemes. So we'll be focused on that today as well. The tax burden's distribution, for example, how best government should negotiate and shift the tax burden around so that taxation does not become destructive to any class of income earners. And what about, of course, the impact of tax waivers? Surely that warrants examination as well. So on this segment, we'll ask, how does our tax avoidance and tax evasion impact our society, and how can we guarantee that the tax burden on each person is fair and not unjust? Joining our panel for this discussion, we're happy to have with us Mr. Akash Maharaj. He is Ambassador at Large for the Global Organization of Parliamentarians Against Corruption, known also as GOPAC. GOPAC, of course, is an international non-governmental organization made up of parliamentarians from across the world working to strengthen good governance, to uphold the rule of law, and to combat corruption. Good afternoon to you, Mr. Maharaj. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. Thank you for the invitation to join you.
We have as well joining us Dr. Thompson Fontaine, an economist. He currently is working in South Sudan. He has worked for the International Monetary Fund. He did so for 13 years. His work and his writing have focused on growth, currency crises, development, fiscal management, and debt. He's from Dominica, and he was a senator there previously. Good afternoon to you, Dr. Thompson Fontaine.
A very good afternoon to you, Kieran, and to the panelists and to your many listeners.
We have joining us as well Dr. Robertine Chatterton. Dr. Robertine Chatterton is a chartered accountant and fraud examiner, joining us this afternoon from St. Kitts and Nevis. She is a retired senior lecturer from the University of the West Indies, Cavehill, where she lectured in accounting, auditing, fraud, and Caribbean taxation for 30 years. Currently, she lectures in multi-jurisdictional tax at the graduate level, and she is currently compiling a book on taxation in the Caribbean. Good afternoon to you, Dr. Robertine Chatterton. How are you doing?
Good afternoon to everybody. Thanks for inviting me to join the panel. It's good to be able to share my research and experience with a different audience at this time.
And thank you for joining us. We also have with us on this panel Ms. Liz Nelson. Ms. Liz Nelson is Director for Tax Justice and Human Rights at the Tax Justice Network. The Tax Justice Network is an advocacy group consisting of a coalition of researchers and advocates with shared concerns about tax avoidance, tax competition, and tax havens. Liz Nelson leads the network's program of work on tax justice, human rights, and equalities. She is based in Oxford. Good afternoon to you, Ms. Nelson. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Thank you, Kieran, for inviting me, and hello to the panelists and to your listeners.
And finally, we have joining us Mr. Stafford Byers. He is an attorney, originally from Antigua and Barbuda. He joins us from New York, where he works and resides. Good afternoon to you, Mr. Byers. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Mr. Murdoch. I'm doing well, and good afternoon to the panelists and also to the listeners. I hope this will be a fruitful endeavor today.
Yeah, we will. We've devoted quite a bit of time to it. We don't usually have such a large panel, but we thought that the issue itself needed a very broad a number of perspectives. Mr. Maharaj, I wonder if you could just open the discussion up for us. I mean, we're talking about tax, but it's been sparked by the Pandora Papers. When it comes to tax avoidance, tax evasion, why is the Pandora Papers leak so significant, Mr. Maharaj?
Well, I suppose the main reason it's been so significant is because of the scale of the revelation. First of all, in the recent history of leaks, the Pandora Papers, the most recent following on things like the Paradise Papers and the Panama Papers, The Pandora Papers are far and on away the largest revelation of secret or illicit movement of resources, both to avoid and to evade taxation. The second reason, though, is that it has not only is there a large amount of information, but that information has revealed or reconfirmed, I should say, the extent to which the world's governing elites are implicated in tax evasion and the massive scale of the amount of money that is being moved around the world. There are more than 300 politicians named in those papers who come from roughly half the countries of the world. There are something of the order of 30 current and former heads of government and heads of state. And the numbers that we are talking about, the scale of money that has been secreted in tax havens and anonymous accounts and shell companies are in the trillions of dollars. And to all practical purposes, that is an incomprehensible amount of money. There are all sorts of ways we can try to express how much money we're talking about, but I would, the most modest assessment of what the Pandora Papers revealed would say that putting aside tax minimization and looking specifically at illegal tax evasion, the best estimates are about $500 million a year, and the minimum estimates. That is enough money to far and away enough money to end world hunger and to end lack of access to potable water. In other words, for the amount of money that is being stolen from the world societies, that is almost certainly killing more people than war and famine combined.
And Ms. Liz Nelson, of course, we know there's a difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion. We're usually, of course, told that tax avoidance is not an illegal act. Tax avoidance is usually described as just making sure that your stuff is in order so that you're not paying too much taxes. I may be simplifying it, but what is the distinction, I would ask you, and do all countries make the distinction? And does it matter to make the distinction?
It's an interesting question because I think in the a lot of people will think of tax avoidance as a legal activity, and I think you can take a line that it is and tax evasion isn't, but it is much more complex than that. And I think what has been revealed, certainly over the last 10 or 15 years, are two things. One, the case that a number of what are called like tax avoidance schemes that have been dreamt up by big kind of law firms and accountancy firms, when tested in the court of law, in some countries, are found not to be avoidance schemes, but evasion. And more, I mean, we have had senior accountants in the Big Four indicate that, there's such a fine line between the tax avoidance and the tax evasion. So it's almost, I mean, one of the things that the Tax Justice Network do is we talk about tax abuse, because the impact is the same that you mentioned in your introduction around inequalities, around human rights. The impact is the same, that loss of revenue. And that would provide public services and infrastructure and a well-ordered administration. But the other point isn't, and I think this is really important a point I want to get across during today, is that the revenue issue for tax isn't the only issue. The Pandora Papers are undermining democracy because those powerful elites, those powerful politicians, are just working different rules to the rest of us. They can circumvent rules like the rest of us. So there's a real issue there about transparency and democracy and accountability and undermining good governance.
And Dr. Robertine Chatterton, I'm going to bring in the big question for this segment because I want to get to it early and everyone will have a chance to deal with it in some way. But I start out with you. What effect does it have on our society when we don't pay our due share of taxes?
Well, I would like to, before we say what effect it has, just to follow up on the comment that it goes beyond good governance, it's an ethical matter. And I think the way in which we interpret whether it's tax evasion or tax avoidance goes against ethics, because you can interpret things the way you want to interpret them. The tax evasion is, as we know, illegal. Tax avoidance, as an accountant, I would say, is good tax planning. And we have to be careful as accountants, law firms, whoever is doing, giving this advice, that we are ethical in our behavior. And over the years, I've said, can we teach ethics? And we've been told, yes, we must teach ethics. But I think that there's an underlying understanding in society as what is wrong and what is right. So that's where I would want to draw the line between tax evasion and tax avoidance. Very fine, but it goes towards our ethical principles.
And in terms of the effect that it has on society, when we see this massive avoidance or evasion in taxes.
It means that there's less money to go around and do the things that governments need to be doing. It means that we can't provide the social services at a reasonable price or free for those who are not able to pay. So not paying our taxes means that the standard of living for those persons in society who are unable to look after themselves will fall, and they will be really below the poverty line and uncomfortable in this life.
And Dr. Thompson Fontaine, what effect does spiriting away, concealing wealth away to less taxation or no taxation at all, what does it have on countries around the world, especially developing ones?
Yes, indeed. And what strikes me about this most is not only the fact that you have wealthy individuals doing this, but you have state actors. You have prime ministers, you have government officials. So what this boils down to is a situation of massive looting. What we've noticed, though, is a shadow world that many people knew nothing about, but which is real, and as Maj indicated, in the trillions of dollars. So it has the effect of making impoverishing countries. And what you will find is that in many of those countries where leaders are implicated, these are some of the poorer countries in the world. So what this means effectively is that monies that would otherwise go towards social programs, towards improving living standards, these monies have been siphoned out, and they've been, governments are basically involved in that and really impoverishing their populations. On the other hand, for the individuals that are doing this, they're looking to enrich themselves, and you could say that they're avoiding the paying of tax to certain countries, and that has a secondary impact, because by not allowing the country to gain access to those resources, it obviously has an implication for government budgets and the ability of governments to take care of their own. So it is twofold: the fact that governments are involved, or individuals within governments involved, and private individuals, is what makes this very concerning to me.
Mr. Stafford Byers, there are, of course, legal means by which persons use certain jurisdictions and firms in those jurisdictions or elsewhere to incorporate and manage their wealth in places where they can pay less taxes. But, of course, the exploitation of those legal means has been revealed to be so great that it becomes more and more of an issue of concern. So my question would be, if the effect of this activity is so serious, and when we have these sorts of leaks, we realize, oh my gosh, it's so serious, why don't governments act to curtail it?
Well, I think governments do not act to curtail it because of a number of reasons, two of which I'll mention. Number one, the people in power are there not only to serve the people, I think, not primarily to serve the people in many instances. I don't want to paint everyone with the same brush. A lot of people are in government to be self-serving. It is unfortunate, but we see it not only in the third world or developing countries. We see it right here in the United States. You know, there was a time we used to claim that it wasn't here. So number one, they're self-serving. Then you'd ask, why don't the people in opposition beat the drums and rally the troops against this thing? It seems as if it would appear that way to me, that many of them don't want to change it, because when they get in power and access to money, they want some place to hide their loot. Now, this is unfortunate, because people are supposed to enter into politics in order to better humanity. But unfortunately, when we look at what is going on, taxation becomes necessary because we need society. Society needs to be funded. Government is empowered, whether legislatively or through natural law, to in some way tax their people in order to provide certain services. We need education. We need health. We need a good, reliable justice system. We need roads. We need the technological highways now in order to bring our people up. And when these things are underfunded or not funded at all, who gets squeezed? The poorer people get squeezed, no education, their lives are cut short, they have to work longer, and they get less pay for it. And the people who, including leaders, are at the trough drinking most of the water are the ones who are paying less to maintain those troughs.
Mr. Akash Maharaj, coming back to you, what impact does this sort of evasion have on societies and their development, and even the avoidance, which the schemes which are legal, but of course the amount and the scale of avoidance is what is of concern. What impact does it have when we're not paying our fair share of taxes?
Well, I think we should begin by being clear who we're talking about when we're saying we. Because one of the greatest sleights of hands that are played by wealthy people around the world is convincing ordinary people that it is in our best interest to allow them to evade taxes. Because truthfully, no one likes paying taxes, no one likes having to pay bills. But tax evasion is being committed not disproportionately, not by ordinary people, not by people who are struggling to make ends meet, but by the richest members of society. And globally, the scale of that impact is difficult to comprehend. For the amount of money that the world is losing through tax evasion, that would be enough to end extreme hunger and poverty. It would be enough to also provide primary education to every child on the planet. It would be enough to reduce child mortality by 2/3. It would be enough to reduce maternal mortality by 3/4. It would be enough to stop the spread of HIV and malaria. And it would be enough to cut in half the proportion of people without access to clean water and sanitation. And it would be enough to do that roughly 6 times over. So to put it another way, what the world loses to tax evasion just through the loss of resources would be enough to transform human civilization as we understand it. The truth is, there is no poverty in the world. There are only poor people. Antigua is a perfect and tragic example. Antigua is a monumentally rich country. And I'm sure that there are people listening to this broadcast who are rolling their eyes at that. Because the truth is, although the country is rich, the people are poor. And that is because as a result of the fact that there are no personal income taxes in Antigua and Barbuda, there is no capacity to redistribute wealth from the people who have the most to the people who need the most. In terms of GDP per capita, Antigua rates very high. It's about 44 out of 200 states in the world. It has a GDP per capita that is higher than Brazil, higher than Mexico, higher than South Africa. But it's also one of the most unequal societies in the world. It ranks 15th in world inequality. The reason for that is because one of the key reasons for that is because there is no personal income tax, or no personal income taxes in Antigua and Barbuda. It means that it has become a haven for people who have money and want to hang on to it. And it was a sleight of hand, I would say. Even when Antigua and Barbuda had a tax rate, it was very modest. The highest tax band was 15%. And when it was abolished in 2016, the political rhetoric that was offered to the population was that this would help make everyone richer. Well, since then, Antigua and Barbuda's GDP per capita has fallen by 7%. The abolition of personal income taxes has only made the wealthiest members of society wealthier. In effect, our acceptance of tax evasion or tax avoidance or tax evasion that masquerades as tax avoidance makes us all poorer. It makes the world a more unequal place. It steals from us our quality of life. And really, it is stealing away from us the possibility of a better world. All the things that I've listed, hunger, child mortality, lack of access to clean water, these are some of the oldest enemies of the human race. And we have come to believe that these ills will always be with us. But the truth is, we could get rid of them at the cost of the swipe of a pen. There's poverty in the world, not because poverty is inevitable. There's poverty and there's suffering in the world because tax evasion deprives the world of the resources necessary to rid ourselves of it.
Ms. Liz Nelson, I mean, on that issue of focusing on the elites and super wealthy, why is it we focus on the elites and super wealthy when it comes to avoiding and evading taxes? Is that not something that applies to other classes of income earners? Why do we focus so much on the elites and the super wealthy?
Well, I'm sure it does. I mean, the act of paying tax is something that should apply to us all. It's, you know, that age-old thing of it connects us. It's a contract with our governments. The more of us who don't pay tax, whether you're wealthy or not, that trust and that relationship, that contract is eroded. So we have to focus on the wealthy. I mean, as my colleagues on the panel have said, you know, the amounts and the scale are absolutely obscene that we're seeing from the Pandora Papers. And the fact that we're talking about, you know, 35 heads of state and former heads of state, their dynastic kind of families of wives and children and so on. It's very wrong because and there's a moral imperative and a political imperative for us to change that. You know, the wealthy there are, you know, that they have this opportunity by consolidating their wealth and consolidating political power at the same time to keep the status quo, and we must you know, focus on the wealthy to redistribute that wealth. It's incredibly difficult for governments without revenue to make that redistribution, but they can do it by a progressive range of taxes that need to look broadly at the impact of what taxes do. So it's really important both to look at a whole range of wealth taxes, capital gains, and just the final point I think I just make about that. At this time, we're at such a pivotal moment when so many countries, so many people have been suffering from COVID and continue to do so. That also makes it, you know, trebly important for us to really focus our energies and our political will to make changes.
Dr. Robertine Chatterton, onto the issue of how the tax burden is sort of applied to all of us. So beyond the problem of tax evasion and evasion masquerading as avoidance, there is also the problem that governments have to deal with of maintaining an equitable tax system. The traditional wisdom, of course, is that overtaxing lower income earners will, of course, prevent them from improving their standards of living. And of course, again, the traditional wisdom is that if you overtax the wealthy and elite, you may be hurting your economy by preventing people from investing their money. So my question is, from your experience working in the Caribbean, how equitable do you think our tax burdens are? Wherever you have experience in the region, how equitable do you think the taxes are distributed across people in society?
The tax burden is not as equitably distributed as it could be. And governments have from time to time changed their way of dealing with the issue. For example, many countries have in the Caribbean have introduced VAT. And this has happened over, I would say, a 20-year period. This is one way they have perceived that it spreads the burden across everybody, since it's on all items, maybe except medical supplies and baby food. And because everybody has to shop. But that's just one aspect of it. The other areas like property taxes and those kinds of things, capital gains taxes, different countries have applied it in different ways. For example, Trinidad has capital gains tax, whereas many of the other countries don't have. The property taxes are there, but when last have they been reviewed? And how is this determined? Who does the evaluation? So it gets to the heart of the policymakers as to how the tax burden can be distributed. I know that listening to some of the conferences that I've attended in the Caribbean, there's a review from time to time. The Caribbean Organization of Trade Tax Administrators looks at things, but I don't think there is the will, and this is the importance, the will to make sure that it is equally distributed. There is an effort, but I don't think it has gone as deep as it could. And there is also, as we said, how do you persuade people to recognize that taxes have to be paid, whether you're rich or you're poor? Obviously, the wealthy can pay more, and so their rates should be different. But I know, for example, in Jamaica, where they've started at the school level to encourage young people to understand that taxes ought to be paid. I've seen across Trinidad, Barbados, where there are taxes on your credit card to kind of prevent people or discourage persons from buying so much online. So there are a variety of ways in which governments across the region have tried to spread the taxes, but it needs an in-depth study plus the will to make the change when it is necessary.
And Dr. Thompson Fontaine, if I could bring you in from an economic perspective, governments, we are told, ought not to make taxation destructive. So what is your advice, Dr. Fontaine, on how the tax burden should be spread across society, and what policies create an equitable tax system, Dr. Fontaine?
That's an excellent question. What I've seen in many Caribbean countries is that the tax system, it is not at all equitable. You have a situation where even governments use that system as a means of providing favors, as a means of getting votes. For example, one that is really abused in my own country, Dominica, is duty-free exemptions, where you would expect everybody to pay their fair share of duties, yet a number of persons are exempted for political reasons. So the burden is very unfairly distributed. And government policies, for example, Ms. Shatterton mentioned the value-added tax. That is one way of trying to have an equitable distribution. But then when you get into issues of property taxation, for example, you'll find that those more wealthy persons are not taxed on their property. They either don't report it or they are not taxed. And ultimately, the individuals pay for it. The person who earns, say, $50,000 a year has no way of avoiding taxation. The taxes are removed even before they receive their income. They can't avoid it. It is the individuals whose incomes are not regulated, and generally rich individuals, who are able to avoid taxation and move it to offshore accounts. So I think it's a question where the governments need to be conscious of this, and also to ensure that the poor or the middle-income persons are not unfairly taxed. But you will find that the middle-income persons are the ones who bear the true burden of taxation.
So I'm curious as to what you think about how we approach import taxes across the region.
Yeah, and that's the point I was trying to point to. That is where I think the problem is. The fact that the taxes are so high, it means that individuals who can get to their governments or get to their ministers. So I think there are ways that governments can actually use the tax regime to help.
Mr. Stafford Byers.
Whenever tax policies are going to be changed, there should be some kind of public hearing as to how it's going to affect people. I've long felt that way.
Mr. Akash Maharaj, coming back to you.
Ultimately, we only have a right to expect things from our fellow citizens and from our society if we recognize our responsibilities towards our fellow citizens and society. I think, though, that there is a risk that while it is important to say that we all have an obligation to meet a responsibility to meet our obligations and to pay taxes, there's a risk that if we focus too much on ordinary people, we avert our eyes to the fact that the vast majority of crime and damage that is being done to our societies is being committed by a very small percentage of society. As I mentioned before, Antigua is one of the most unequal societies in the world. It is the 15th, has the 15th most unequal wealth distribution on the planet. And that should be both a source of grief, but also a source of optimism for the people of Antigua and Barbuda. The reason I say optimism is because that indicates that it would be possible for the country's needs to be met simply by taxing the wealthiest members of society, a relatively small number of the people in that country. I think that one of the reasons why income tax was abolished was that when it existed, it started at a very low level. It started at roughly people who had about $5,000 per year in Eastern Caribbean dollars. That tax is being levied on quite poor people in a country that has people who are millionaires many times over. The key then is to bear in mind, yes, we all have an obligation to pay our taxes and to support our society, but the greatest obligation should fall upon the shoulders of those who benefit the most from society. In countries like Antigua and Barbuda, and countries around the world, we should not be seduced by the specious arguments that low taxes are good for all of us. Low taxes are good for the people who have the most. And we can meet our basic needs as a society if we only tax the people who have benefited the most from society, people who have the greatest capacity to pay those taxes, and people who, frankly, will notice it the least. There is no good moral, and there's certainly no good economic argument to say that we should not tax the rich because it is somehow good for the poor. If to believe that, you would have to believe that rich people won't work because they don't have enough money, and poor people won't work because they have too much money. And that is preposterous.
Ms. Liz Nelson, are taxes still considered an effective means of redistributing wealth, funding universal improvement of society? A lot of people sometimes ask, why isn't there better regulation in different countries as to how equitably enterprises distribute what they earn? But what do you think, Ms. Nelson?
I think it's an important way to redistribute it. And the crux of the matter is around unfair taxes, as Akash pointed out, is driving inequality. And actually what COVID-19 has surfaced, if it wasn't obvious before, it's even more obvious that the most marginalized people in our societies are impacted by severely impacted by austerity policies, the lack of public services, sanitation, clean water, whatever it is, and these are kind of human rights at the end of the day. But the inequality and the issue of redistribution is both within a country and it's between countries, and that, just to zoom out a bit, is one of the key things. I mean, the big tax avoiders, the big tax dodgers, abusers of tax, are the wealthiest countries, and they have both a moral and responsibility to begin to address this, to have the political courage to address this, because the rules around international tax need to change so that lower income countries are not the ones that are suffering from the lack of public services, from the lack of health services, from education, and frankly, things like having consumption taxes like VAT, yes, they're important, but lower income and people, or people with no incomes, frankly, they disproportionately pay more to buy those items than wealthy people. And that, so what's really important about redistribution is that you look at the whole package. You look at what social protections are available. You look at wealth taxes, excess profit taxes, and VAT. You look at things like what's going on around tax incentives and tax credits. So it's a whole package around redistribution in country and between country.
Dr. Robert Dean Chatterton, I want to play a clip for you to react to. I'll ask a question. It's sort of related to the question. But this is an extract from one of our MPs, Asset Michael. He's speaking in February at the last budget debate about the Liberal approval of concessions to large businesses, foreign and domestic. He used to be the Minister of Investment, but he resigned amidst a massive bribery scandal that revealed that he shook down a British investor for millions of dollars in bribes and gifts. But take a listen to this extract.
We have a very generous and overly abused system of tax concessions to investors in job-creating, profit-making business operations for periods of time well in excess of what is needed to get these established firmly on their feet.
Mr.
Speaker, I say to the Prime Minister, the Minister of Finance, the Junior Minister of Finance, to take an honest look at these endless tax concessions to monopoly operations.
Okay, I understand you didn't hear that. I don't know. We seem to have that problem. Let's try one more time. We'll just play it one more time through a different means and see if we resolve that issue. Sorry about that, but let us know if you can hear this time.
Very generous and overly abused system of tax concessions to investors in job-creating, profit-making business operations for periods of time well in excess of what is needed to get these established firmly on their feet. Mr. Speaker, I say to the Prime Minister, the Minister of Finance, the Junior Minister of Finance, to take an honest look at these endless tax concessions to monopoly operations. We have a very generous and overly abused system.
Were you able to hear that, Dan?
No, I didn't hear it, but let me just talk generally about concessions rather than focus on that, because concessions arise in all societies. And I'm saying that concessions are necessary to attract business people, and in most countries you have arrangements for business development, arrangements with companies that are coming into the country, and they usually say, if you give us this concession, we will provide jobs, if you give us this concession, we will develop certain areas. And on paper that sounds good, but we have to be sure that they really do deliver what they have said they will, and that the amount we lose from the concession balances off. And I'm not sure that this happens in every case. So would be my take on concessions, particularly to people who are coming in and offering to develop our countries.
Dr. Thompson Fontaine, as I've realized, you seem to be experiencing an issue where you may not be hearing the extracts, but they would have been this from the same audio clips that would have been provided to you in the email invitation. So you'd have some sense if you're able to listen to those audio clippings for the background. You'd have had some sense of it. But I'm going to play another clip now, which would be customs. This 11-second clip, customs. This extract is from the Prime Minister, Gaston Brown. I suppose I'm playing it for the benefit of the listeners, but you may not be able to hear. This is an extract of Prime Minister Gaston Brown speaking in late January at the last budget debate. Take a listen to the extract. He's speaking specifically in relation to the issue of waivers. And we touched on it, I think, particularly Dr. Thompson Fontaine, you touched on it earlier when you were speaking about Dominica in terms of the waiver of concessions, particularly discretionary waivers when it comes to imports and so on and so forth. But this is an extract, as I said, of the Prime Minister. I'm actually stalling here, folks, because the studio is working out something technical, which is why I've been speaking on this particular point for quite some time. Are we able to play the clip at this point? Not at all. Okay, I'm told 5 more seconds, so I just have to keep talking for 5 more seconds, and eventually we will be able to have you listen to that clip of the Prime Minister speaking in Parliament back in January on the issue of tax waivers and concessions.
Yes, I have. In fact, on an earlier program on your radio station, we discussed it where the Prime Minister, talked about it. And in fact, my comment at the time was that this is a, if you like, a gaping hole in the tax system in Antigua. And the fact that you have so much in waivers been given shows, again, that there is a problem with the tax system, with the tax regime, and the need for corrective action. One of the things as well that we always think about is just the ability to collect those taxes. Are there systems in place that will, in fact, allow the government to collect the taxes, and you don't have people, especially business persons, avoiding those taxations. These are the kind of issues I think that, that governments need to concern themselves with. And this constant granting of favors is what hurts the countries more than anything else.
Mr. Stafford Byers, the use of discretionary waivers. Sorry, we weren't able to play that clip, folks. Joe, do we have it? Do we have it queued up? Gaston Customs, do we have it queued up at all? Because I mean, I know the guests might not hear it because of technical difficulty, but the audience usually does hear. So if we can play it, we can go ahead. Yeah.
Careful note should be taken that in 2019, of every dollar that was collected by the Customs and Excise Division, unfortunately, an equivalent amount was waived.
Don't know if our guests might have heard that one.
We heard it.
Oh, lovely. Thank God. Wow. That's amazing. Sorry. But yeah, that was just an example of what we are speaking about when we talk about concessions in Antigua Barbuda. Mr. Byers, the issue of discretionary waivers is one facet of how the political class are sometimes complicit in the under-collection of taxes. For example, when disgraced MP Asset Michael spoke about concessions during the budget debate this year, it actually sparked a response from the Prime Minister. This clip is Asset Waiver, Joe, if you could pull that one up. It actually sparked a response from the Prime Minister, who then revealed a new allegation at the time of fraud against the disgraced MP. He alleged that Michael had misrepresented the value of a property deal in order to support a request to the Cabinet, of which he was a member, for a tax waiver. But here's the clip.
He said to us, Mr. Speaker, that he spent all of his money on the Labour Party in opposition. I do not have that to be a fact, but I'm telling you what he said to the Cabinet. And he pleaded with us to give him some relief on the property taxes. 7.5% to be paid by him and 2.5% by the buyer. Mr. Speaker, we asked him if the buyer, who is a very wealthy man, could have paid the 2.5%. He said no. He said the deal was such that the price that was offered for the property, that he had to absorb the 10%. Now, Mr. Speaker, we're not unreasonable. Our colleague, we tried to help him at the time. And we made a decision to waive the property taxes. At the time, Mr. Speaker, we felt that it could have been about $2 million, 5.4 million EC, and that we would have waived about $540,000. So, Speaker, lo and behold, we learned subsequently that the member sold the property for $50 million.
I just wanted to get your reaction to that. The fact that we seem to have ministers, some of whom, by the way, are publicly known to be wealthy individuals. Sir Robin, for example, Asset Michael, is known to be a wealthy individual. Gaston Brown himself is a very successful businessman, says he's worth millions. That we have such individuals in cabinet, according to the Prime Minister, waiving each other's taxes and on such dubious grounds as having spent money on their political party. What are your thoughts, Mr. Byers?
Well, what I find to be terribly galling is that the community allows this to go on in an untrammeled way. Because here is a prime minister admitting to what I said earlier at the beginning of the show, that many of these guys are in government just for self-dealing, admitting that one of his colleagues was granted a waiver that you or I could not have gotten unless we had some kind of political connection to somebody in the cabinet. That's number one. Then number two, the prime minister said that the person had misrepresented. It was already a very generous waiver, even if the facts were as stated. But that it became even more egregious that this guy went and sold this thing for millions more. And he got it all waived, and the prime minister did nothing. I mean, clearly that's some kind of fraud. Of course, the whole thing was fraudulent, if you were to ask me. But at least I keep saying that when the people, these kind of things must be made public, must be made and disseminated to the public, and people need to rise up against this kind of stuff.
We are nearing the end of this segment. We have about 8 minutes left. I'm going to go to each panelist just to give them an opportunity to give their final words, to wrap up, to say anything they think they didn't get to say during the segment. Mr. Maharaj, your final words for this segment.
I will follow on from Stafford's comment, and that is that ultimately the revelations of the Pandora Papers, what we're talking about on this program, all of it becomes meaningless unless it motivates the people of the countries, of countries around the world, to stand up to corruption and to tax evasion. And really, I don't, notwithstanding the importance of the Pandora Papers, I don't think there's anyone in Antigua and Barbuda who, prior to the Pandora Papers, was unaware of the fact that a large percentage of the political class was self-serving. The question is, are you going to keep accepting it or not? Tax evasion is often framed by those who benefit the most from it as being a kind of nudge and a wink, something we would all do if we could get away with it. First of all, that's not true. But second of all, it's an attempt to make ordinary people complicit in the pillaging of their own societies. The richest members of societies and politically well-connected people in society aren't evading taxes because they want that money to trickle down to other members of society. They aren't evading taxes because they want to create jobs and further the economy. They are evading taxes because they want to live a better lifestyle than their fellow citizens. And as long as we continue to tolerate and accept that, we become complicit in our own enslavement. Antigua and Barbuda is a democracy. It could end these practices if the people decide that it's important enough to end it. And I would say this to everyone listening to this program. You may think that you're benefiting because there are no income taxes in your country, but you are paying taxes another way. Every time your public infrastructure fails you, that is a tax on your quality of life. Every time your child can't get a good education, or you have to worry about where your next paycheck is coming from, that is a tax on your dignity. And it's a tax that you are paying so that richest members of your society can live lives of which you can only dream. If you think that's all right, then that is your choice. But don't let them lie to you and say that they are cheating you for your own benefit.
Ms. Liz Nelson, your final words for this segment?
Yes, thank you. I think in a way I'd follow on from that and say you can't kid. It's important that we all pay into and, if you like, strengthen this social contract. We can't, by avoiding taxes, by abusing taxes, we just do harm to ourselves and to our fellow human being. If our governments don't have the revenue, they don't have the political will and the policies to redistribute wealth. What inevitably happens in crisis, a country isn't resilient. And at that point, you're looking, that's when debts and loans become important. And the final thing I would say is that, going back to this, who is political elites and the wealthy are avoiding taxes, but it's rich countries and the rulemakers of the global tax system that attracts big companies, multinational companies, and wealthy individuals to use their secrecy jurisdictions. It's that kind of cohort of countries, rich countries, making the rules that needs to change. Our proposal is that the place for that is not the OECD. The place for that is the United Nations Tax Committee, and to have a UN tax convention with an additional monitoring center to make sure this happens and there is the political will to drive this forward so that we can curtail inequalities.
Dr. Robertine Chatterton, your final words for this segment. What would you want to leave us with?
What I would like to suggest for those persons who are listening, that we must, as a people, ask for a certain level of disclosure. There must be accountability. And so when certain things happen, somebody should be able to account for why it has or has not happened. And as one of the panelists suggested, annually, there should be that kind of discussion and a forum where persons can ask certain questions. I know that in small societies, persons feel that they are punished by asking questions. But if enough persons ask, then it becomes the norm to disclose what has happened to the taxes, how they've been used. And that's an integral part of governance. We hear about good governance, so let's have the accountability.
Dr. Thompson-Fontaine, your final words for this segment.
Indeed, you know, part of the fallout that we have been feeling as average income earners in our countries is the fact that the richer countries have been putting a lot of pressure on these offshore jurisdictions, including the Caribbean region. And what this means is that a number of banks, for example, have been threatened with their corresponding relationships with the banks in the US. And that has put a burden on average individuals. I'm here in South Sudan. I can hardly do a transaction with my bank in Dominica without being, you know, called on the phone or questioned and so on. And a lot of people now are having difficulties opening bank accounts in their own countries. The amount of, you know, proof you have to give and so on, you know, this know your customer type of thing around that. That is as a direct consequence of this behavior of a few individuals who have perverted the international banking system and who continue to siphon away these trillions and trillions of dollars. So any way you think about it, we suffer because we pay a disproportionate amount of tax, and we suffer because of the inconveniences that are placed upon us.
Mr. Stafford Byers, your final words. Mr. Stafford Byers, your final words, sorry.
Yes, I think that what I'd like to see is that the average rank and file citizen would demand from the public official, transparency and accountability. I also like to see public hearings on whatever frequency, annual, quarterly, every 6 months, whatever. Any major policy should be subject to some kind of public hearing. And then we should know who are the people and the organizations lobbying for whatever changes there are going to be to the tax code. I'm not saying there shouldn't be lobbying, but we should be able to know who are the folks lobbying. And then campaign finance should be publicly funded. Because if you pay to put me in power, you're going to look for something in return. And yes, we have to get to the international organizations and advocate for equity for the smaller nations. But when we come into the nation themselves, we must advocate for the average citizen who are being exploited on a daily basis by these people in power.
All right, with that, we're going to leave it here. I want to say thank you to all five of our guests. We were joined, of course, by Mr. Akash Maharaj, Ambassador at Large for the Global Organization of Parliamentarians Against Corruption, known as GOPAC, by Dr. Thompson Fontaine, an economist currently working in South Sudan, Dominica National, and a former IMF economist where he worked for 13 years. Dr. Robertine Chatterton, a chartered accountant and fraud examiner who joined us from St. Kitts and Nevis. She's also a retired senior lecturer from the University of the West Indies, Cave Hill, where she lectured in accounting, auditing, fraud and Caribbean taxation for 30 years. She's currently compiling a book on taxation in the Caribbean, in fact. Ms. Liz Nelson joined us as well from the UK. She is the Director for Tax Justice and Human Rights at the Tax Justice Network. And finally, of course, we were joined by Mr. Stafford Byers, an attorney at law who joined us from New York. He's originally from Antigua and Barbuda, and he works and resides in New York. And we thank all of you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.